Welcome in to Locked On Nets. This is your host, Josh Bass, and on today's show, we will discuss the Nets' struggles against two Southeast foes, and myself and Marcus getting to take in a game together at Barclays and the great experience we had. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here. What is going on, everyone? This is your host, Josh Bass, and joining me is my man, my co-host, and most importantly, my friend, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Josh. We're in the same room, so it'll be a lot less editing for me.
We're sitting literally 6 inches apart, and it's good.
I just put my ruler away, so it's official now. The measurement is in. No further questions on that, please.
Yep, and we went to the game together against Charlotte, and we were sitting next to each other as well. And also,
although you shifted seats midway through the game. I think it was in the third or fourth quarter. You swung around to sit on the other side of our other friend Leo, who was also in attendance. Shout out to Leo.
Yep, shout out to our friends Leo and Joaquin, who were in attendance with us. And unfortunately, we saw a terrible game. The Nets lost to the Hornets 123-112. There was no defense at all. I think we both thought the officiating was bad as well. But really, between Kemba Walker, Nicholas Batum draining threes at the end of the shot clock, Jeremy Lamb as well, the Nets just couldn't get any stops. And it was disappointing to watch because Charlotte's a team at home that they should handle.
Yeah, completely agree. And like even Frank Kaminsky was lighting it up for stretches. And the Nets defense was definitely the biggest concern because the offense, they shot over 50% from the field and like they put up 112 points, like you said. So they did their job on that end, but it just makes that Spurs game seem like even more of an outlier where they like actually played great defense. And I don't really know like what was different in that game versus these last few, but something hasn't been working the last couple games.
Yeah, how the hell did we beat the Spurs? I don't know. I feel like offense, whenever Damari Carroll gives you 20, and he was really good. He scored 14 in the first half. He was dripping. So when he gives you 20, you have to find a way to win that game. And maybe it's just teams are getting more comfortable with the zone because not only the Nets are playing it, but other teams in the NBA have adopted it for a few minutes at the time. So maybe coaches are starting to say, hey, let's practice the zone a little bit. And we know we're coming up against the Nets soon, and they're going to have that as a heavy dose of their defense, especially when you're playing teams like Charlotte and Miami that are desperately fighting for playoff position. And those games mean more than they would at the beginning of the season. So I think that could be part of it. And I don't know, the intensity just wasn't there from the Nets. And you'd think that they'd be fired up because it was Spencer Dinwiddie's first game since returning from injury. I thought he looked okay. But I don't know, it's disappointing to watch a team like Charlotte that doesn't have a lot of firepower drop 123 points on the Nets.
Yeah, I think the point you made about the zone is what has jumped out to me the most the last couple games. Just because, like, we'll talk about it in a second, but in the Heat game, I was watching the away feed, and, like, in their pregame thing, like, one of their big talking points was that the Nets were going to play zone, and so Miami had to, like, be aware of that, and they were talking about how you need to, like, pass to the middle and kind of, like, kick things out from there and, like, penetrate the zone basically to break it. So, like, if the broadcast team is talking about it, the teams themselves are definitely also talking about it. And I think that the secret is pretty much out, and especially with the All-Star break, probably these teams that knew, like, we're playing the Nets either the first game or a couple games out after the All-Star break, they're like, we might as well get a practice in against the zone. So maybe it's that these last couple teams had time to work on it over the All-Star break. That could be. So maybe it'll lighten up as we get forward. But we've talked about also that the schedule is going to pick up in terms of the Nets are playing, like, a ton of playoff teams in a row. So it could get dicey here. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, do you think they should switch to more of a man? I've always felt that the zone gave them the advantage of surprise, and also considering they don't have the best defensive personnel, it was a nice kind of curveball to have in your repertoire to throw at teams.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, they've gotten guys back. They're pretty much all healthy now, and they still don't really have a ton of good defenders on the team. So the zone made sense from that perspective where it was about kind of hiding individual players and making it more about the team defense. But if that's not working, I don't know what you pivot to. Like, there's not really an easier scheme to run, I guess.
Yeah. I think, honestly, Dudley was good to have for the zone a little bit just because he is such a smart player. I mean, he can hold up enough in man if he's not going up against someone who's super explosive. But if you're not playing him, really, maybe it doesn't make sense to go to the man defense because you have guys like Travion Graham and Caris LeVert and Spencer that are athletic, and you have a guy back there in Jared Allen that hypothetically is supposed to be able to cover up for mistakes and clean up some opportunities if guys do get to the basket.
Yeah, Jared Allen's been really bad the last couple of games also. You made a comment at the game. Yeah. I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing it on air about Jared Allen, or even if you even remember it.
I'm full transparency here.
You said that you were wondering, is he now the most overrated player in the league?
Well, I feel, okay, and that's a hot take, but I feel like he's just highlights now. I mean, everyone's like, oh, the fro, like the nice dunks, the blocks, but when you look at the substance of his game, he's really been lacking, and I feel like he shot 4 or 5 in the game against Charlotte, and then what did he shoot against Miami? 3 of 6. So not that bad, but he combined for 5 rebounds in just 41 minutes, only had 1 block in those 2 games, and I feel like his blocks, when he gets them, they're incredible highlights, but it's almost like for someone of his size and athleticism to only be averaging 1.6 blocks a game in 27 minutes, I feel like he should be just getting more opportunities to block shots. And I don't know, maybe he's just a little bit passive when it comes to those situations and he can get bodied out of position. But I've soured on him a bit recently, in addition to his need to continuously take these threes once a game or so and just completely brick them.
Yeah, I agree with that, and also I'm wondering if maybe he's getting tired, like from a minutes perspective. Like, he's still not playing a ton of minutes. Like, he only played 23 against Charlotte, and part of that is performance based. But I remember last year he didn't come out of the gates like playing a ton of minutes, so he didn't necessarily play like a full season or like as full as he is this year.
Yeah,
so maybe that's catching up to him also. I don't know.
Yeah, and also we've seen with guys of his archetype. I mean, everyone compares him to Capella, and remember the big thing about Capella was that he didn't have the stamina to play more than like the 25 minutes a game he was last year, and he's really improved that this offseason. But maybe the same thing could be said about our boy Jared Allen.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that needs to be looked at in the offseason in terms of his strength and conditioning and all that stuff. It's kind of hard to adjust that midseason. Obviously, you would have liked him to have improved on it last offseason, but maybe they didn't realize how big of an issue it was, or maybe he had other things to work on.
Yep, absolutely. We will take a quick break here on Locked On Nets, and coming up, we will discuss, unfortunately, the miserable game against Miami, and then get you the return of Grinds My Gears later on tonight. Coming up. Welcome back to Locked On Nets. Marcus, the Nets played, if you can call it that, basketball last night against the Miami Heat. The defense was a little bit better, 54 points allowed in the first half, but they just couldn't hit a shot at all. I mean, finishing with 88 for the game is atrocious, and they lost by 29 points. Probably the most demoralizing loss of the year. What do you think?
This was a weird one for me, just because I felt like throughout pretty much the entire first half, I felt like they were right in it.
Mm-hmm. And like the process was fine.
Yeah, it was almost like Miami was like slightly better, like for the entire game, and like as that added up throughout the game, it turned into a blowout. Like the Nets were down 5 after 1, 10 after 2, 20 after 3, and then they wound up losing by 29. So it just kind of kept building, and they never really made a run. Like in the Hornets game, they obviously got killed in the second quarter, 37-18. But other than that, they actually outscored Charlotte in all 3 of the other quarters. But in this one, it was just like nothing the entire game.
Yeah, they should have just gotten rid of the second quarter against Charlotte and make sure that doesn't
You should
count.
Be able to punt one quarter.
Yeah, exactly. But I felt the same way. It was like, okay, the Nets were, I knew they weren't playing well, and then I looked up at the scoreboard and they were down like 73-54. I'm like, what the hell is this? I don't know. I thought D'Angelo Russell played well. He was hitting some shots, but really no one else could get going. Joe Harris had a nice game, but even still, he was missing some open shots. Graham struggled. Dinwiddie was really bad. I think he didn't have his rhythm going. Alan Crabb going 1 of 9 from 3. Really the only highlight in, if you look at combined the Charlotte game and the Miami game, was the sick Rhodey Kurucs dunk, which was I watched like 5 times. That was the only thing that gave me hope from this weekend.
And he honestly, he brought like a good spark in both of those games. And I know you've maligned him, but I thought Rondé played pretty well in both games also. He's at least like bringing energy. Maybe like the being out of the rotation has kind of like woken him up a little bit. But I thought he brought energy. Obviously, he had that charge in the Charlotte game that really set you off in person. But other than that, I thought he played pretty well.
Yeah.
But just back to D'Lo. He scored 10 points on, he only took 8 shots the whole game. He pretty much, I think he scored all 10 in the first half.
Yeah,
and so he was shut out in the second half, which is troubling just because you want the all-star player to kind of like play up to that level. And if he's not reaching his ceiling, it's kind of hard for the Nets to score, which is what we saw in this game.
Yeah, but I don't know. He only played 23 minutes. I think the most consistent person they had last.
Yeah,
last night.
I'm not saying he played bad. It's
right.
Just like I wanted more.
Right, no, I think that's the the tough part, I'd say, now that Dinwiddie and LeVert are back, is that if D'Lo's cooking, they can't just go to him every time. When you have guys more like Graham and whomever, where they'll just defer to the point guard. But now he's pretty much playing all of his minutes with either LeVert out there or, in some cases, Dinwiddie. And those guys are confident enough where they'll say, oh, like, no, I want an opportunity to score. So it's almost like we were talking to Gavin earlier, and he said something ridiculous, but like, kind of, there might be too many mouths to feed. I think they need to figure out a pecking order between D'Lo, Spencer, and Karis. And right now, for me, Karis should be a clear number three.
Yeah, and also, because those guys are coming back from injury, I think Kenny maybe is trying to get them back into a rhythm and get them more involved, get them touches early. I saw a lot of LeVert in the first quarter in terms of, like, he was almost like orchestrating during the first 10 seconds of the shot clock, like trying to see if he could get a pick and roll or get something going. And then once he couldn't, or occasionally he would, but if he couldn't, he'd kick it out to D'Lo on the wing with maybe like 8 or 10 seconds on the shot clock and say, all right, bail us out.
Yeah,
and
they weren't playing well as a team.
Yeah, that's like not what D'Lo has been doing well these past couple of months. That's not why he was an all-star. It was because he's able to kind of control the pace and the flow of the game. He can speed things up or slow things down as he wishes. So yeah. I think putting the ball back in his hands more is probably going to help on offense.
He needs to be the one with the ball at the start of the shot clock, kind of going back to what you're saying, because he takes a while to get into his moves. I mean, Dinwiddie can be a bailout guy. LeVert can kind of get to the basket at times when there's not much time on the shot clock, but his shot sucks, so he can't bail you out with that. I mean, really, I'd say D'Lo has to be the primary option on offense and then defer to LeVert in some cases, or maybe even a guy like Kurtz who, can, if he has a mismatch, can really blow by someone. But yeah, it's interesting what you talked about with Rondé, because he did play well in that Hornets game, I thought. He had a couple tough finishes inside, which he usually doesn't hit. Usually he just throws it off the backboard. But the play, yeah, he was a plus 11 in that game. The play that set me off was when the Nets had some momentum, and it was like a 4-on-2 fast break
after
or whatever.
After the Joe Harris block.
After the Joe Harris block, which got me so hyped up and out of my seat. And Rondé, of course, just takes it right down the middle, not even looking up, and just barrels right into the Hornets defender. And it's like, that's the same problem he's had going back to his rookie year. And it's so frustrating to watch because it's a momentum killer. And he should be at most the fourth option anytime he's on the floor, and usually the fifth, just because he doesn't have an offensive game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was obviously a bad play. The Nets, I think, had cut it to 9 at that point. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if they'd scored in transition, there could have been 7 or even 6. But I still think he played well overall, and it's still encouraging to me, at least. I don't think he should be like a regular part of the rotation, right. But I think as like a spark, if things aren't going well, he's deserves some minutes at times.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point though. So if we're taking a look at the power forward rotation, the Nets' next game is tomorrow against Dallas. What do you think the 4 distribution minutes should look like?
I still like Travion. I think even though he shot, I think 3 of 10 in the last game, I like his defensive energy. I think he'll keep starting for now, I guess. But I want to see more Rhodey, I think.
Yeah.
I know he's struggled, but he seems like he's maybe starting to turn a corner again. And I think with his energy and his length, it can really help the team out.
Yeah, I almost think it should be more, like, what do you think of this idea, having it be more matchup-based? Where I know Kenny probably doesn't want to do that because it's not a good look for the players, but saying, okay, depending on who the forwards are on the team we're playing against, maybe we might need someone like Travion, who's more of a defensive stopper, if you're going up against like an OKC type or someone like that where they have a go-to scorer. But especially if you're playing a team like Miami, where the starting forward combination last night was Olynyk, who did go off, but whatever, and then like Justice Winslow, who's kind of playing a hybrid point guard, small forward role, saying, okay, maybe we don't need Travion. Let's go for someone with more offensive punch, which is Kurtz, or having Damari start at the 4.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it comes down to, is that the Nets have a lot of guys, but it's that none of them is really good enough to kind of earn a full-time thing. Like, none of them are good enough where you'd say, oh, we should start this person every night. It's kind of like you kind of play it by the matchups, and if a certain team kind of requires a certain skill set to go against them, then you can play that guy. And I think that's the luxury that all this depth brings. But I guess my point is that none of them is good enough where you should say, start this person every time.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that's something that maybe we'll look to see Kenny do in the playoffs, implement that. But who knows if the Nets are even going to get to the playoffs at this point. I think it's
90%, 538.
That was a few days ago. I would still bet on it. I think it's very good likelihood. I'd say over two-thirds. But really, when you look at their upcoming schedule, it's Dallas tomorrow, then Cleveland. Both those games are at home. Then they have a couple days off before they play the Hawks on the road, and then back to Brooklyn to take on the Detroit Pistons. And the Nets are a game and a half up on Charlotte right now, who's the ninth seed. They really need to go 3-1 in those four games, ideally 4-0, of course, because looking at their schedule at the end of the season, we all know how tough that is, and maybe things change. Maybe a couple teams are tanking for maybe they don't need to play their guys because they've already clinched up their playoff position, but you don't want to chance that. So they really need to get three wins here, and the way they've been playing these last couple games, I can't be encouraged by it.
Yeah, and so they're at 32 wins right now, and so you figure it's going to take at least, what, like 37 to get in the playoffs probably? 38 in the East?
I would be comfortable with 38 and 44, because that would mean that probably 38 and 44, because that would mean that if Charlotte goes 9-11, they would tie them. And I guess who has the tiebreaker between the Nets and Charlotte? I think they split the four games this year. So maybe if they get 39-43, that would be good. 10-10. I don't think Charlotte will go any better than that.
Yeah, I think if you can get to 40 wins, I think you're pretty much in. Just looking through to see if the Nets have that tiebreaker. I think it was, did they play three times this year?
They played four.
Oh, they had the back-to-back.
Yeah, the back-to-back, which they split, and then the game where they won where D'Lo went Super Saiyan, that was last weekend,
yeah,
and then last night. Yeah.
So it's 2-2.
Yeah, they played them like four times in the stretch of 6 weeks, which was a lot.
I feel like it's been the same like three or four teams. Like it was like a couple Bulls-Celtics back-to-backs.
Yes,
they had like two of those. They played the Magic like three times.
I feel like we played the Hawks seven times this year. And we all played Philly all in the first half. I feel like we haven't played the Knicks in forever because it was two in the first week. We need more Knicks games.
Yeah. Need to have Gavin back on the podcast. And
Maybe not. Never
not
mind.
Just out of frame waving in our faces.
Yeah. So we'll take a break here. And then coming up, we will talk about the return of what grinds my gears. And this is something that was related to our experience at Barclays Center. Welcome back to Locked On Nets. And of course, you can get this podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. And when you get in your car, please tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked On Nets or any of our other brother and sister podcasts. That's not something I have to say, the brother and sister part, but I'm a team player, so I do.
You're a good guy.
I really am, right?
Yeah.
I think I am.
I think so,
I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
Someone who's not a good guy, the corporate overlords in Brooklyn. Marcus, so we get to the game on Friday. I was late. Sorry about that. That you had to wait like 15 minutes for me. We almost didn't get our Notorious B.I.G. bobbleheads.
I'm so happy we got them.
I know. I haven't opened mine yet.
I took mine out. The head leans kind of a little bit more forward than I would like, mm-hmm. but I'm kind of working it into shape. I'm kind of bending the spring a little bit.
Okay. My roommate said that we might be able to sell those for like $50.
Yeah, people at the game were offering, I think, $10 for one, but
I don't know.
Oh,
we need to sell this ASAP.
Yeah.
Because he was telling me he's a big Devils fan. I think that's a hockey team. And this guy,
like
this Corey Schneider guy, I'm not sure if he's related to Rob, he said he sold one of his bobbleheads for $200. And no one knows who Corey Schneider is, and everyone knows who Notorious B.I.G. was. So.
Oh, I thought Corey Schneider was the friend who sold the bobblehead.
No,
that's who
no.
the bobblehead was.
Yeah, that's the hockey guy.
I know literally almost nothing about hockey.
Same. We're not going to be starting Locked On Devils. But if you do want to start Locked On Devils, if you're a big fan out there, I think we might be getting the NHL Locked On off the ground soon. So feel free to contact David Locke or Gavin.
Stay tuned. Yeah, contact Gavin, I would say. I don't want to put Locke's name out there.
But anyway, getting back to the point, the beers at Barclays Center were $17. And this is like a $5 increase since the last time I was there.
Yeah, I noticed that. And also, we had to, or we didn't have to, but some like very charismatic guy approached us about doing these surveys on the tablets there. And I don't know, I thought, sure, like I'll just like tap 10 or whatever for, I thought it'd be like a couple questions about the experience. But no, it was asking for like email, home address, like if I pay rent. It was some very obscure questions, so I kind of abandoned it midway through.
Oh, I completed it to finish. But anyway, the thing is, he said it was going to take 45 seconds, and I don't know who it would take 45 seconds for. It took me at least 90. And though, you know, those iPads that they have at these stadiums, they also have them at airports. They're never like synced fully. So you're touching it and then it's like, it thinks you touch something that's like literally 5 inches away from it. It's like at my gym, cause I work out when I was on
you look great, by the way.
Thank you. When I was on the treadmill, it was the one machine was just completely broken. And it wouldn't let me change the channel.
What does this have to do with tablets?
I don't know. The tablet wasn't working on the screen. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
For sure.
And
for
anyway,
sure.
I complained to him about the $17 beer. And he straight up said, you're captive here. It's like an airport. So we can raise the prices to as much as we want. We know people still buy it.
He did say that.
I was like, it's a little malicious of you.
Very transparent, though.
Yeah. So then I was trying to just go around and see if there was anywhere I could get a cheaper beer than $17.
Which I don't think you could, right?
Yeah.
But also, that wasn't the only injustice that you experienced at this game, Josh. I know you have more things that ground your gears to a halt, like the people sitting around us, maybe.
I feel like you were more annoyed by that than I was. I was fine with it. They got up a lot.
It was so much.
Yeah. Well, we ended up being surrounded by like a whole Little League team. And it was like the kids, the parents, and...
The treasurer?
Yes, yeah, the treasurer who was sitting behind us. This huge guy. I hope he's a listener. But this guy, he like took our seats, and then we had him move because we were in someone else's seats then. And then when those people came back, we had to go to our original seats. And it was like such a big inconvenience for him. I'm like, buddy, you're in our seat. So he was sitting behind us and like doling out the bills or the invoices to the whole team. I'm like, how did we end up in this section? We were the only non-Little League associated people in the entire section.
We were surrounded. They had us captive. I did enjoy the game at halftime, though. It was a different Little League team that played basketball. They were very good.
They
shout out to number 63, maybe 67.
Yeah.
He was great.
He was like an old-school throwback low post player.
Number one also had a nice touch on his jumper.
Yeah. If anyone was at the game, I'd love to get a roster and a box score of these kids.
That'd be great. Maybe we'll start a Lockdown podcast for them.
Lockdown Little League. We need that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be down.
Yeah. Maybe we could take on second hosting duties. Maybe this is a good way to reunite us with Gavin.
I don't know if you want that.
Yeah, I probably don't, but it's a good point. Anyway, we are getting off the rails here. Marcus, where can they find you? I know I usually do the plug, but I wanted to pass to you for this time.
Sure, I'll plug myself. Thank you. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter. I'm going to plug Instagram.
Ooh,
Josh
okay.
never does, but it's more personal, but whatever. All are at Marcus Barahal. That's MarcusBarahal. I'm not a Marcus with a K. If you're a Marcus with a K, no disrespect, but it's not my thing.
Yeah,
I'll
it's
say.
Like you're Swedish, if you are.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah. Do you want me to plug you?
No. Okay. I plug myself. You can follow me at jmbass_, and you can follow us together in unison at Locked On Nets on Twitter. Please subscribe and rate and review our podcast, regardless of how many stars you want to give us. Hopefully it's 5. We'll take 4. 3 or under, I'd be disappointed, but you have to do what you got to do. I don't want anyone lying about the ratings they're giving us. And we will be speaking to you guys again soon, and hopefully with some better news on the Nets, because honestly, these last two games have been really depressing, and I was so excited.
Last 3, too, with Washington.
Last 3, and I was so excited. Yeah, 3 blowouts, basically. I was so excited for first Karis to come back way ahead of schedule, of course. Then Spencer, we thought he wasn't going to be back until maybe that March 13th road trip, ends up coming back 2 weeks before. And to see the output that the Nets have put up in the most recent 3 games, it just really sucks. And hopefully they'll get back together and start meshing, and Kenny can get their act together. But looking forward to seeing what that holds and hopefully getting some W's. We will speak to you again soon, and that's going to do it today on Locked On Nets.
Bye.